Okay, all right. You know, when I went to the monastery years ago, before I was even thinking of becoming a novice, I was still teaching. I was teaching a class on Evagrius. Some of you might know who Evagrius was. He was a 4th century ecclesiastical writer, very important for the history of spirituality, but he was condemned by the 5th Ecumenical Council for some of his metaphysical sort of speculations. But his spiritual teaching is sound. Why? Because it's basically his systematic articulation of the experience of the Desert Fathers. So it really wasn't his, it was part of it. So I was teaching a class on Evagrius, and I was very excited because there was a new book that had come out about Evagrius, and I read the book, and when I was at the monastery, as I said before, I was a novice, and I sat down with one of the learned monks there to tell him about what I was reading and the class that I was planning to teach, and I was very excited about it all. And I think, now that I look back on it, of course, I wanted him to do nothing but to say, hey, this is so great, you're doing a great job, this is going to be a wonderful class, keep up the good work. That's probably what I wanted to hear, even though in my mind it was just my own enthusiasm that was kind of bubbling over, but I think I wanted positive reinforcement from him. So when I was done, it was his turn to talk, and he said, that's all very well and good. He goes, but... It all sounds very theoretical. And the moment I heard that, I thought, oh, I'm in. I don't know what that was. Huh? It was a thought burning up somewhere, yeah. So he said, everything that you said is good, but it's all very theoretical. And the moment I heard that, I sank. I thought, oh boy, I'm in trouble now, right? I mean, I said the wrong thing. He goes, and you'll find that people here, meaning in the monastery, people here are less interested in theories, and they're more interested in practical things. And I'm like, well, of course. I mean, how did I forget that? And then he gave it another twist, right? And he said, and it's our experience that people who are excessively interested in theories, including theological theories, right, are people who usually don't have a practice. And I continued to think about that for months afterwards. I still think about it, and I realized that, you know, on the faculty of divinity that I was teaching on, everybody has a different theory, right? The feminist has her theory, the ecumenist has his theory, the biblical people have their theories, the dogmatic theologians have their theories, right? Everyone has a different theory, a different ideology, a different perspective, a different point of view. And this is the thing that makes them all different, doesn't it? And not only different, but it's what sets people at odds with each other. Oh, well, you don't subscribe to my radical feminist sort of program, so therefore you're my enemy now. And your ideas are very different than mine. I have liberal theories, and you have conservative theories, and we're not friends now, and we have to fight and argue, and it's to fight to the death, and so. But then I thought about it, and I thought, you know, how different are we really, right? We all put our money in the same bank. We all, liberal and conservative, right? We all buy the same one-pocket T-shirts from the Gap, right? We all buy the same kinds of groceries from the same upscale supermarkets, right? We all drive 2 or 3 makes of the same kinds of cars, and on and on. I thought, you know something? We love to think we're so different and we're so unique, but in terms of our practice, by which I mean in terms of the way we concretely live our lives, we're not really that different at all. So we need the theories, we need the ideas, we need the ideologies to make us think that we're different and special, and right? This was talk about scales falling from the eyes. I realized just how empty my own life was and how shallow it was, and how, because I saw these people as being different from me too, just as they saw me being different from them. And I realized that, you know, if you bracketed the theoretical stuff for a few minutes, you would see that, right? We're not that different after all, in terms of the choices we have made regarding the lives that we live. So practice, right? We need to have a practice. And practice is that thing. Practice is what sets us apart, not theory, right? Practice. And set apart, right? God, I am holy, so you should be holy. And everybody knows that holiness, the word holy means to be, right? Set apart. Set apart. And how was I set apart if I was no different from all the crazies and the liberals and the, right? I thought I was so different from them, didn't I? But in fact, my life wasn't, you know, we listened to the same music, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right? So we need a practice, and I think everybody should have a, and the services of the church, by the way, I'm sorry to say, and don't misunderstand me, are not enough. Because one can do them blindly, one can do them by rote, one can be distracted by, right? Corporate prayer without personal or private prayer is almost pointless. Just as private prayer or personal prayer without the liturgy is equally pointless. These two things go together. They mutually support each other. If I go to church and I don't pray, there's almost no point in going to church. And if I think I can stay home and pray on my own, because God is everywhere, without participating in the liturgical life of the church, I'm also fooling myself. That's also pointless. The two things need each other, right? In the monastery, all work in the monastery stops 1 hour before Vespers. Why? So we can go to ourselves and prepare for the Vesper service, to pray a little bit before we go to church. It sounds crazy to lay people when you tell them, what, to pray before praying, you know, right? I say yes, because you go to church, lay people now, you go to church and you typically have an awful time, right? You're annoyed at the usher because he didn't greet you in the right way. You get annoyed by the people showing up in their mink coats and leather jackets. The kids are running around making noise. You don't like the way, right? All right. If you prayed before you went to church and asked God to help you, you would have a totally different experience of that service, right? So we need both. We need the public and the corporate and the communal, as well as the deep engagement on the personal and the private. It's like faith and works. They're not separate. They go together. There are things in life that go together. And the two types of prayer that we have are. So we need to have a practice, or, you know, we call it a rule of prayer. I don't like that word. I mean, we're Americans. We don't like rules, right? So if you don't like that word, I mean, you pray because you love God. You go to the place of prayer because that's the place of love. You go if I came into this room right now and there were 100 of you or whatever it was, and there was one person in this room that I loved, guess where I would go, right? I would greet His Eminence. I would say hello to them. But I would be making a beeline one way to that person, right? because we go where love is, and if we love God, right, well, that's where we go, to spend time with God, to be with God, to pray with God, to open ourselves to God. It's not a discipline. It's not something. It's not a punishment. It's not something we're required to do. You don't feel that way when you love someone. Oh gosh, it's time for me to love that person again. I mean, right? It's the most free and spontaneous, and right. That's why you pray, because you miss God. Because the world drags you away, and we forget, and there's oblivion and laziness and all these things. They say, oh my God, I miss God. And you want to go to that place. And there's so much that we can do when we get there. I mean, somebody asked me about prostrations the other day. Do we need these things? And I say we do, because, you know, this is not Gnosticism here. It's not just stuff in the mind. That the prayer is not just about the mind or about thoughts. It's about the whole body should be engaged in the life of prayer. And to prostrate physically, that's a tremendous kind of symbol in a sense. The whole organism now is involved in lowering itself before God and humbling itself. It's one thing to feel humble or to say, to think you're humble, but it's something else to actually, right? To fall down on your face like that before, in a way that maybe you can only do in private anymore. There are times too, right? The body can often, I said earlier that the heart and the guts often know things before the mind does. The body knows things sometimes. The body sends you signals. It's like, hey, slow down. You're stressed. You better stop, right? The body knows. There are times when I get back to my apartment, it's the end of the day, I'm exhausted. It's been one crisis after another, one phone call after another, one difficult meeting after another. I get back to my apartment, I am wiped out. I mean, I don't think I have energy just to, you know, maybe I'll pour myself a glass of wine just to say, oh, thank God the day is over, right? No. So, and I feel I don't even have energy to pray. My mind is, I don't have the mental clarity to go and to pray like that. So what do? There are times where, okay, I'll make a prostration. I'll just make the sign of the cross. I'll stand in front of my icons, I'll make the sign of the cross, and I will physically, mentally I can't do it, I'm tired, but I physically I can bow, I can make a prostration. Maybe I'll make two or three. And you want to know what happens? The soul figures out what's going on, that the body can lead the way, and the soul can actually see what the body is doing. I mean, by physically, because we're one, the organism is one. So if the physical side of me is making this gesture, well, then guess what? It's dragging along in its wake. And maybe the first time I'm not there, the second time I start, right? So the prostrations, I think, are very important, and they can be very, very helpful and a very important spiritual tool. And my advice on these things is always quality over quantity. Better three or five prostrations done with attention and with love and with humility than 100 that are done thought, because it's just gymnastics, right? If the mind, right? I have my prayer rule now says I have to do 100 and I'll do 100 and that's it. I mean, okay, there's something to that too because you're being obedient, but we want to move past that. All right. Other things too: prostrations, set prayers, spiritual reading, the Jesus prayer. I don't need to list all of the things that I think all of you know and that go into a rule of prayer or a canon of prayer. Or these things should all be obvious. What I want to emphasize is this, and here's where I make bold to offer some practical advice. I think the first thing that we need to do is just stop. Right? I have never seen so much rushing around in my whole life. I mean, I've been alive for half a century now, and things used to be a little slower. Now it's just crazy, the pace. You all remember, if the phone rang years ago after like 9 o'clock, you thought, oh my God, somebody died, right? There was this unspoken etiquette that you didn't call somebody's house after a certain hour, right? Now, we are all expected to be available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for the most insignificant kinds of things, right? Not to mention the pace of life and the speed of things and instant this and rap, right? Right. I think it's way too fast. We're rushing around way too much, and we all need to stop at different times in the day. You know, there's the play on the old, you know, the old phrase. Someone said, "Look, don't just do something, sit there," right? And we've lost the capacity. Was it Pascal who said that all of the misfortunes of a man's life come from the fact that he is incapable of sitting still and alone in his room by himself, right? Because you rushed out and you did something or whatever. So we've lost this capacity to be still, or we're losing this capacity just to stop. We don't know what to do when we stop anymore because we're just so used to rushing around and all the distractions and the computers and the games and I don't know what else, right? So we need to stop and we need to recognize the value and just like we've done here over these few days. Right? The ordinary routine is stopped and here we are. So we need to stop to take a moment, just a moment. You can get back to the rushing around in a few minutes. It's going to be there for you. Let it go. Take a moment. See, right? Look. See what's going on around you. Notice things. Notice the environment. Notice the people that are around you. What's going on, right? Breathe, 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 right? Relax. Just take that moment, take that breath. Find the love of God that is in your heart. Take that moment to find the love of God. Take that moment to remember that you love Christ. That's what you love. That's who you are, right? Remember who and what you are. Remember I said, what must I do to be saved? Every day ask yourself, who am I, right? Who am I? Remember the promises that you made. Take that moment to remember the promises that you made and what is truly important to you and what is the most important thing to you, right? We need to stop now. I think we need deliberately to make this part of our practice because the way our culture has evolved, we're being robbed of the time even to think anymore in any kind of deep way. So, but if you're rushing, you'll never see yourself. You'll never come home to yourself. You'll always be living outside and not inside. You'll never actually have been present, right? Oh yeah, I can fit you in between my 11:30 and my 12 o'clock, and I know it's a terrible situation you're with, but can you start talking because I got to go soon? And you know, we're not even there. We're not even there. We're not even there. We're not present, right? And as I said the other day, we will come to the end of our lives. Well, let's hope this doesn't happen. The possibility exists that we will come to the end of our lives and discover that we never actually lived. Right? That we never actually lived. That our life was just a superficial wandering and meandering between, you know, sensations and experiences and meetings, and we never lived deeply, we never lived fully, we never lived deliberately, we lived outside of that space which is God, right? We refrained from that. So just a very practical thing. So when you get up in the morning, instead of reaching for the iPhone, maybe you shouldn't even leave it on the bedside. It's too easy to grab when you roll over and, you know, right, what time is it and what's going on and what's in the news and is the world still out there and, you know, right? You know, right? So instead of reaching for the iPhone, instead of turning on the, I fall into this trap too. It's terribly tempting to go right back to, right? Instead of turning on the computer or instead of rushing out the door, take a few minutes to pray. First thing. St. Basil, letter 2 again, says that offer the first movements of your mind to God. Right? That's why in monasteries, in the world too, liturgy, first item of business, we give the best part of the day to God, that early morning part. When you have clarity, when you have focus, when you have energy, when it's quiet, that's the time. That's such a great time. Right? Take a few minutes to pray. Think about what's your aspirations and intentions are for that day. Right? Every day is a new day. Every day can be a new beginning. Right? Look at it that way. Think about it that way. Who do I aim to be on this day? What do I aim to be on this day? I'm going to meet 3 people today. Who do I want to be in those meetings? What should I be in those meetings? What spirit do I bring to those? Think about those things intentionally. Okay, what are my hopes for the day? The day is a new beginning. And if we made mistakes yesterday, well, today is a chance to improve on them. Okay, I saw so-and-so yesterday, and I said the wrong thing. I spoke out of turn. I was rude. I made a joke. I thought it would be funny, and I ended up hurting. You know, tomorrow I'll do better. I'll be more careful. Maybe I'll see something nice now, and right? Let's learn from yesterday and build on that and move forward and breakfast. If you eat breakfast, if you're a person who eats breakfast, eat your breakfast at home. Don't be like me. I used to eat breakfast in the car, driving to work in traffic. Okay? That is barbaric, and it's not healthy, right? It's not healthy. If you're going to eat breakfast, how long does it take? Oh, rush, 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 right? How long does it take to eat breakfast? It only takes a few minutes. Eat it at home, not on the way to work, not in the car, and not at your desk. Right? Dedicate that time. Eating is Mediterranean people know this. Eating is sacramental. Eating is sacramental. The food that God gives us for nourishment, right? This is a mysterious and a wondrous and indeed a sacramental thing. Be in that moment. Eat with attention. Eat with gratitude. Like my mother said, chew your food, my mother used to say, right? And I would say, chew your food, not your projects, not your worries. Right? Not your fears, not your anger. Let that stuff go. Just, right? There's so much beauty in the world, in the littlest things. And of course, our minds are never there. They're always on something else. Driving to work or driving anywhere. And I understand you have a lot of traffic out here in the LA area. Is that true? I don't know. This is what I hear. So don't see the traffic as your enemy. Right? Don't see the red light as your enemy. Or the stop sign, right? Don't see the traffic or the stop sign or the red light as something that's preventing you and impeding you from getting to the place you want to go to. No, that'll drive you crazy, right? Road rage and all this sort of stuff. People kill each other out there because of these things. Right? Learn to see these moments. This is a stop. It's a stop sign. Say, oh, glory to God, I get to stop. Right, take a breath and say a Jesus prayer. Recollect yourself. Enter the place of your heart, even if it's just for a half a minute. Right? There's an opportunity here. There's a because we spend a lot of time in the car. Not an enemy, but a friend. Stop. Turn your attention inward. Enter your heart, even if it's just a minute. That minute or less could be your resurrection from the dead on that day. Right? But the idea is to remain conscious of these things. At work, so I was talking to somebody the other day here. You know, we end up spending long hours maybe in the office or on the computer or whatever it is. And we get absorbed in our work. We get lost in our work. And we forget who we are and what we are. I say take short breaks. There's a story in the Sayings of the Desert Fathers about someone wanted to know how to live their life. And St. Anthony, I think, said, go and look at the guy down the road there, how he lives. And he goes, and the man is working on his baskets. They would weave baskets in those days to make some money for the supplies they needed. And he would spend maybe a half hour weaving the basket. Then he would stop and he would get up, he would go to his icon, he would pray for just a couple of minutes. Then he would go back to the work, right? And I have a tendency to be a bit of a workaholic. I can get lost in my work. There's never enough time for it, whatever, right? I find, though, that after maybe 20 minutes, a half hour, whatever it is, it's so helpful to get up, just let it go, walk over to where the icons are and say a prayer, read a prayer, give thanks to God, right? Just enjoy the beauty of the icons. Let those sacred images just fill you, right? Fill your eyes and, right? And go back, right? Because why? What happens is that the answers that you're looking for at the desk, the solutions that you're looking for at the desk, the sermon idea that you're looking for at the desk, you will never find at the desk. Right? Stop, take a step away, give yourself to God. Those insights will come. Right? Get up and go. Don't eat lunch at your desk. Go out for a walk. And just the freedom, right? Ideas will come to you. Thought, this is what I need to do in the parish. This is the kind of series of sermons I need to embark on. Oh my God, I've forgotten all about that person who needs me so badly, right? If we open ourselves up to God, God will give us the thoughts that we need to have. He will give us the insights that we're looking for. He will give us the great ideas for the sermons. But if we try to do all of this in our thinking, right, we just get burnt out. We end up, last Sunday morning, we end up Googling, you know, Sunday of the Publican and the Pharisee sermon, right? And that's what I say is not living. Right? All right, so another piece of advice, because I see it all the time, resist the urge to make calls while in the car. When you're driving somewhere, turn the cell phone off, because otherwise the little opportunity that the stop signs and the red lights will give you will be lost because, I'm stuck in traffic, so I'm calling you, right? So there's a lot of little things that we can do to be wise stewards of our time. And if we do have a problem with, let's say, the computer or the TV, we need to cut back on that. That's obvious. So that's what I thank you, Your Eminence, for this invitation. It's hard to believe that I've subjected you to six talks in the last couple of days, but here it is. And for me, the time went very quickly. It was a blessing to be here with you, and I ask for your prayers and blessings and your forgiveness if I said one or two things more than I should have, or if I offended or hurt anyone's feelings or scandalized anybody with something that I might have said. I ask for your forgiveness, and I thank you very much for your attention. Yeah.